My name's Andrew and I'm an alcoholic. They sure are a hell of a lot of people that should be here that's not here. But I'm glad to see a bunch of people from other towns and glad to have everybody. I'm always interested in people that's interested in getting sober. Boy, that's really something when I find somebody that wants to get sober. Anyway, I got shafted on this deal.
Old Indian trick.
Yeah, somebody pulled an old Indian trick on me. You ever been into a damn meeting where they have, you're on the seventh step, you know, and it's all over with in 5 or 6 minutes. Nobody has anything to say. I got shafted. And Helene was down there helping me. I'm going to get her back up here. No, the seventh step of this program means that we've done the preceding six to the best of our ability. And I heard some real good speakers there. Buddy and Helene lined it out pretty good and brought out some things that a lot of people don't really look at when you're coming into the program. And this is what the thing is for anyway. One of the things that they might not have mentioned that I emphasize quite a bit, and that's sponsorship. Because if it hadn't been for my sponsor, I wouldn't have made it. And I was one of these guys that had one of these powerful spiritual experiences, and I did not need to work the program to stay sober. I could have actually stayed sober without working the program. I didn't believe in God. I knew there was a God. But see, what this thing is talking about, what the hell good would I have been if I'm going to teach you to go out there and sit and wait under that damn bridge for a spiritual experience to happen to you like it did to me? See, I didn't have no message to carry. I wanted to go down on top of the state capitol and start preaching. First thing that come to my mind is, what goddamn preachers did you ever listen to? And I was already in the Alcoholics Anonymous just, a few days. I can tell you one thing about this. I know how to fail. I know all them little tricks on how to fail. Step seven, concerns itself with humility. Now, I thought that had something to do with the weather. But as I got to looking, at this thing, and as I reached that point, you know, my old sponsor, he took me through that third, fourth, and fifth step right along with me. And here's one thing that Buddy brought it out a while ago. And might not emphasize as much as I do. I don't think that you can really do much with this that step unless you hear the intimate story of another alcoholic, your sponsor. Because if he hadn't have told me his story, there ain't no way in hell I would have wrote that down, that stuff down in my inventory. I just wouldn't have done it. That was going to the grave with me. And here's where we miss it lots of times. But anyway, humility to me, of course, this is just my opinion today, subject to change, like all my opinions. And it comes back to the old thing, like Alcoholics Anonymous introduces you to yourself. I was trying to be somebody else. I didn't know who I was. I kind of knew where I come from, but I didn't know who I was or what I wanted to be or what I could be. And in that quiet time that we have after the fifth step, when we're going through the sixth step and the seventh step, we find out who we are and what we really could become. That was a time when I took my fifth step, I died. And in the sixth and seventh step, I come alive again. 6 weeks after that, I woke up one morning and I really wanted to live. The thing that I'm encouraging and the thing that I'm going to tell you that can happen, the most beautiful thing that can happen, out of the seventh step, if we get there, is we'll be able to love again. Ain't nobody suffered from a broken heart like an alcoholic does. That's the most devastating kind of hurt. And what happens is we paralyze our emotions where we can't love. We go through all the emotions, but we can't love again. But as this thing is broke down, the ego's all busted down, then this thing takes over, and we're able to love again. And if you're fortunate enough to fall in love, it'll guide your destiny all the rest of your life. And you don't have to put up with that horse shit like you guys are putting up with. I don't have to do anything about that. That's the grace of God. It's not no effort for me anymore. I done died. It's easy for me. I like to do it. I want to do it. I'm here this afternoon because I want to be. Everything I do because I want to do. Except take out the goddamn trash like I have to do this morning. My kids was up there and said, I was taking out the trash, put it in the back of the car, going to go dump it. They said, does he do that all the time? My wife said, it took him about a year to teach him, but he finally learned that. But I wash dishes. I do the things that ordinarily that I wouldn't have done. Because back in my drinking days, all this stuff wasn't manly. It wasn't things that you were supposed to do. But love doesn't have any logic or reasoning to it. The other thing about this step right here, this step seven, is we put our... We come into Alcoholics Anonymous expecting to be taught self-confidence and self-reliance. And that's the biggest bunch of horse shit you ever run into. As long as you can be self-reliant and as long as you can operate on your own intelligence and stuff like that, you ain't going to be worth a damn. This program ain't going to be worth a damn to you. It's not. Not worth a damn. Because right at this time, and I think pretty soon Mr. Judd's going to bring it up, but I like to put it, the complete abandonment of ourselves to God comes down there in the 11th step. Boy, I wish I'd had his part. But you see, now here's another one on the 8th step. I'll tell you how I've done it. I took a sheet of paper about this size. And I had 25 names on there. And the 8th and 9th steps concerned with personal relationship. Okay, I was appalled to find out. I used to hear people say, "Oh, what a wonderful guy he would have been if he just wouldn't drink. What a hell of a guy he could be." But after I got to the 8th step and all these character defects began to fall into a pattern, I was an old good rotten son of a bitch before I ever picked up a drink. I didn't know that. Drunken son of a bitch gets sober, what do you got? Sober son of a bitch. And that's what these steps are for. Is we got to with our sponsor and our spiritual advisor and with our group, with our big book and 12 and 12, you don't need nothing else. We can alter our character where we can live. And all it is, I had an old friend of mine, old Jack Bird. He said, "Henry, I can't do that 8th step." I said, "Goddamn, Jack, all it tells you to do is make a list." He said, "Yeah, but I can't forgive them people that beat me over the head with a pool stick." And I said, "It don't tell you to forgive them. It tells you to make a list." And I guess he died. Didn't Jack die?
Yeah.
Jack died and he never did take that step. Because he couldn't separate making a list from making amends or forgiving. See, by the time we get to this step, that green fuzz we got all over our brain through these first 6 and 7 steps begin to disappear. And our ability begins to change. Okay, we got these 25 names on here. And here's what we're talking about. We're going into an uncharted area. Of spiritual and morality. This is what we're talking about. See, all the time up to now, we've neatly evaded this stuff. We put it in the room, locked it off over here, and we ain't paying no attention to the damn thing. Don't mean nothing to us. We won't fool with it anyway. This is why you need a sponsor. This is why you need a spiritual advisor, because we're going into an uncharted area that we don't know a damn thing about. And we're a little sensitive there anyway. I know I was. I didn't want nobody I just didn't want to regard this thing at all. It was something that I thought I was going to get by with. I knew there was something wrong in that area, but I really didn't know how to address this problem. Okay, after I made my list out, I had to put these people in the category, and I could see what I was doing, and I really didn't want to do this. And another thing that I was completely ignorant of was spiritual laws. I was breaking spiritual laws, and I didn't know what they was. I was ignorant of them. When I put some of the people overseas, it wasn't feasible for me to go overseas. Some of these people, you know, all you need to do is write a letter. And lots of times, they're not even in the category of what needs to be corrected in my personality so that I can get along better. But they are some of these that we're going to have to meet face to face. And here's where we have a good sense of timing, you know. Old con man like me, slick as a button. I run into a man's car that lived down the street from me and tore it all to hell. And I knew I owed that man some. This is one of my first things. Good timing, you know. He got laid off of his job. About to lose his car, didn't have anything to eat in the house. It's December the 20th. And I waited a couple of days and went and made amends. Otherwise, he would have killed me. But I caught him with his britches down. Now, lots of these men, if we're going to be good at them, we're going to make them, we need it's kind of like the whole program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our objective is a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience, whichever one. We need to have an objective, you know. Our objective is to make the best possible relationship that we can with this other human being, because here's where most of our trouble was all the time, that we didn't of brotherhood, we had small comprehension. We didn't understand. We'd put on this phony thing about, you know, I really like Helen, you know, I'd shake her hand, you know, but I didn't really like her. He said, "Hello, how are you? How you doing?" And I didn't have no genuine feelings for people. But after you're in here for a while, you begin to say, "Oh, dang, I'd really like to see everybody in here. It makes me feel good to see them sober and see their life, everything working out for them." This program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the reason why after nearly 25 years, I was a stranger and you took me in. Nobody wanted me. You gave me the chance. Didn't cost me nothing. I don't believe that sobriety should cost anybody a damn thing. I believe that's our job. We pitch in and we help people to get sober. treatment centers, they take you $5,000 and send you to us to get well. But I'll always believe that sobriety don't cost you a damn thing. You see, there's a few barometers in Alcoholics Anonymous. For instance, when I first come in, I hated them goddamn old-timers worse than anybody you've ever seen. They come in one door, and I'm going out the other door because I don't know. They get up there and talk, and they just skin the hide off of me because they know how damn phony I am. That's the guy you should get in contact with. And another thing about me, and I think it's been emphasized here this afternoon by the other people, is I am a book man. When I'm working with people, I take you through this program word for word. You underline that thing as you do it word for word. Step by step. Giving you enough time to get that green fuzz off of your brain and to help you to get sober. Because I don't have no program of my own. I like the program that the first 100 people come up with. Now, you run into people every once in a while that tries to deviate a little bit every once in a while, but, you know. If you've been around Alcoholics Anonymous very long, you see all kinds of people try to do all kinds of things. Used to be people going in and out that door so fast it ain't even funny. Not only that, but a bad example is as good as a good example. You can say, I don't want to be like that son of a bitch. So everybody's welcome. I've had the privilege of attending meetings almost all over the United States. I just found out I knew Buddy from years ago. Of course, I knew Judd years ago. And this really does something to me, you know. I got company at home right now, and I got the grandbaby up there, and they're making a big fuss of him. Hey, he's just a month old, and hey, everybody's making a fuss of him. They kind of get on to me about not being there, but you know, as much as I love my wife and family, I didn't have them when an old tramp put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Let me help you." And he knew what to do. He didn't lecture me or anything like that. He knew what to do. Having a big Thanksgiving dinner. I was dirty and filthy. I said, "I can't go in there." He said, "Oh, you son of a bitch, I know what you want." Went down to the store, bought me a can of sardines and one of them little old package of crackers. That's the best Thanksgiving dinner I've had. Sardines and crackers. Because I was so low, so dirty, so ashamed. And everybody in there running around in their damn necktie and stuff on. Hell, I couldn't go in there and eat with them. And when you're called on, you will know what to do. Even if you've just been sober one day, you'll know what to do. And there ain't no wrong thing to do. I was taking a guy to Norman one time, and he just kept on wanting to die, and I just got him outside and took my gun and cocked it. It was empty. I said, hell, I'll kill you. He got back in the car and went to Norman, and he's still sober, but he don't like me. He got sober by coercion, see. And it ain't past me yet. You come up to me and you want a drink, man, I got some rubbing alcohol. I'll give you some rub-a-dub if you need a drink. I said, that stuff will kill you. And I said, yeah, it damn sure will. Drank it all my life and it ain't bothered me none. We have a lot of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have if we don't stick together, we'll go off somewhere and die all by ourselves. That's the reason why we pull together a little bit harder, and the only reason, the only time you get talked about is when you ain't here. Anyway, I'm about out of time, and I tell you what, any time that I can help, and another thing that I want to stress before my time's all up is the importance of sponsorship. You know, if you don't have one, start thinking about getting one. And like all the people that I sponsor, you can damn sure fire me anytime you want to. But it's hard to hire me back. Because if you don't want to do what I tell you to do, if you don't want to do what you're supposed to do, then don't waste my time. Because I really, in recent years, we don't get to people like we used to. Because, you know, I really like to talk to a newcomer right after he comes out of convulsions. I think he's more susceptible. Otherwise, you're not really that interested in this thing. That's all I got for that.
My name is Judd. I'm not Holly. Thanks, Henry. That's kind of like getting up here and following the Sermon on the Mount. Well, I want to thank whoever was invited. I think it's Bubba and anyone else who, whether the thanks would be appropriate. I enjoy being here. I always enjoy coming to Glen. It's good to be here. My sobriety date is August 25th, 1973. If you'll put a pencil to that, you'll see that flyer's wrong. They didn't talk to me about my sobriety date when they made that flyer. And I'm not to blame for that 25 years it says that I have. They added about 4.5 years to that. So I don't have the 25 years. I think Henry has 25. Henry is at my first meeting. I'm going to share that with you. I want to first share with you why I went to that meeting. And then we'll get into sponsorship. Maybe I'll touch base here as it applies to these last three steps or the maintenance step. But I was just settling down on this real nice, comfortable couch. Well, along about 1969, 70, wherever it was in there. And was going to do an afternoon there, like I did most Sunday afternoons, where I was kind of doze in and out of sleep, watching whatever was on ABC, Wide World of Sports, and healing from that fort. That was my healing mode. And I had just settled down on the couch when my incumbent wife came in and said, I'd like to ask you a few questions. Get this paper, Daily Oklahoma. And I said, okay, what the hell is going on here? It's okay, fine. So she starts asking these questions, and it got my attention. Of course, it was the 20 questions. I shared this with a lot of you, Helene and Pat, and all of you. A lot of you have heard this. But when she got done, I said, how did I do? She said, you missed 21. I said, well, you said there's only 20. She said, yeah, I asked you that same question twice, and you lied about it both times. Well, I don't think I missed all of them, but I missed enough of them to qualify me. And I got the feeling that this wasn't going to be a normal Sunday afternoon. It was that look that she had on her face. And I knew that I was going to have to come up with something like I had never come up with before. And I am scrambling for time, and my brain is racing. I'm thinking, what in the hell am I going to say this time? Because, I mean, this is serious. And if I were to do the same thing that I had been doing to her for 10 years, I knew that would be a very, very large mistake. And, man, I'm just trying to figure out some way that I don't have to get kicked out of that house that afternoon. And I thought, I've got to tell her something I've never told her before. And I was a bootlegger for 13 years, ran whiskey up there from 1947 to 1960, so hell, I knew all about the Kelly Street Club. I used to have some old customers that would go in there from time to time. Some would come back, some would go in there and stay. There were about 30 or 40 of them still around when I came into this program 20 years ago. A lot of them have died off, some are still alive, but at any rate, I stood to all day. I go to AA. And she said, okay. So I started to settle back down, you know, watch the ball game, and she said, let's go. I said, you mean now? And she said, yeah. Well, I didn't mean right now. I mean, I'd call them for 3 days, figure out where the meetings are, get around to doing it. She said, let's go now. So I got into White Pages, Yellow Pages, wherever it was. And came across the Kelly Street Club, and I knew where that was, and I called over there, and it was Sunday, and they said, yeah, they had a 2 o'clock meeting. I think that meeting still goes on there. So she and I go to that meeting, and the only person I remember in that meeting that day was Henry. And the only reason why I remember him wasn't because he was so damn good looking, don't get me wrong. It was something he said that pissed me off. And I still remember it, just like it was about 15 seconds ago. It was really obvious, you know, to anyone. You know, we're sitting in meetings, and here they come. How many times have we seen this over the years? Here she comes, leading him in. Or he's leading her in. And I was led in. And I want to share with you one thing I saw. A lot of people have been around here a long time and they don't see a miracle. The first person I saw in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, was a person I'd sold whiskey to for 13 years, kept a whiskey stash out in his garage out on South Walker, and it's Jim D. and Alice D. that we all know for sure. Miracle number one. His wife Alice was there, and that was miracle number two. But at any rate, I thought, my God, if this thing could work. And I asked Jim how long he'd been here, and he said, 10 years. Well, I meant a matter of minutes. You know, I thought he'd just gotten there. Been sober 10 years. Well, I sat down in the meeting, and Henry, when it came his turn, said, you know, if you want to do this for your kids, your grandkids, your wife, your boss, your job won't work. And I thought, yes, OB. The only reason why you're saying that, because you know this is my wife. Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, after 20 years, if you were to ask Henry, he'd say, yeah, that's the only reason why I said it. It needed to be said. I needed to hear that. I didn't like it. I've heard a lot of things in the last 20-some-odd years. Heard it some recently I didn't like. It doesn't have anything to do with the truth. It may or not be the, may or may not be the truth. Often it is, and I don't always like the truth. The truth was I needed to hear that. And the truth is, I suspect that a lot can be said for that part of the big book, you know, where it says that God works, has mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. Do you agree with that? I do. I think that God works through people. Do you agree with that? Then I guess you'd have to agree that God works through people his wonders to perform, right? Well, I believe that. So that needed to be said, and I'll remind you that you nod your head here in a few minutes because I'm going to bring that by you once again. Well, Henry said that, and I remember leaving there, and I'm mad, and I remember hearing two or three other things. I went to about six or eight meetings in the next 3 months. Because the only reason I was there is to fade the heat. Didn't want to get sober. It was miserable. And you told me I'd need to go to a lot of meetings. Didn't do that. Didn't attend a lot of meetings. Seems like looking back over the years that new people, especially new people that go to a lot of meetings, usually stay sober, don't they? Conversely, people who don't usually get drunk. End of story. Isn't that simple? Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out, does it? So they said, you need to go to a lot of meetings. We went to about six or eight. You need to buy these two books, the big book and the 12 and 12, and I did. And I didn't study them at all, but I read, glanced, maybe 10 minutes. Didn't read them. Wonderful books, you know, didn't read, you know. The old boy that has something like the big book or any other good book but doesn't read it has no significant advantage over someone that can't read, does he? Huh? Hell, he might be worse off than the illiterate, because the illiterate usually is a very, very good listener. They've learned to listen because they know they can't read. And someone like me is probably not going to read and I'm not going to listen either. So I didn't do that. And you told me something that just blew my mind. You said you need to get a sponsor. And you said a sponsor is somebody kind of like a guide who knew the territory. Well, I didn't go to many meetings, but I heard enough to think, my God, I wouldn't tell that. I wouldn't have said that for anything. Sitting in front of a group of people and damn if I'm going to get a sponsor and have someone tell me what to do. I was in a meeting recently, a meeting of about 12 people. There were some brand new people there, and there were some very old people there, old in the program, and fairly old in years. Usually those things are synonymous. And a couple of the older ones were talking, downplaying the concept of sponsorship. Isn't that sad? Yeah. They didn't need anyone telling them what to do. They weren't going to do this or that. But my God, that was me. And even if I felt like that, I don't believe that I'd want to share it. Sometimes I have some feelings that I don't share because I'm not too sure about it. I need to run it by my sponsor first. So, they're not going to do that. I'm going to tell you something. I'd much rather have one and not need him than to need one and not have him. It sure can't hurt. It's kind of like believing in God. May not be one. I suspect there is. Sure can't hurt praying to him. Or her. Or it. Or whatever it is. That higher power. Now I got to tell you about my sponsor. My sponsor is sobriety dates May the 10th, 1948. Excuse me, 1946. He'll have 48 years. May the 8th. That's been my sponsor for 3 years since I've been in Dallas. My old sponsor is Leroy Davis. A lot of you know him. whose permission I had to break his anonymity in Oklahoma City. I drank, sold whiskey to, he was an old whiskey customer, for 13 years. I was raised with Leroy on Capitol Hill in Oklahoma City. Now I want to share something with you about this guy that was to become my sponsor. Leroy Davis probably was the most godless man I believe that I've ever met in my life. Leroy Davis was a very mean man. Leroy Davis is still a fairly mean man. He just got a little goat dose of God. Little Leroy is a great old big boy. And I was delivering some whiskey at Marie's Lounge one night, and he had torn the telephone booth off the wall, and there was a man in it. Kicking that telephone booth, and the old booth has kind of shrunk a little bit, and the glass is broken, and my God, there's chaos going on. I walk in, there it is, and I said, Leroy, what's been going on? He said, oh, Judd, I've just been doing a little work for Southwestern Bell. You know, it sounds about like him, doesn't it? Now, Leroy was there too, but not that first meeting. I think I met him the second week. And before I saw the face, I heard the voice. And if you've ever heard Leroy's voice, you'll never forget it. Right, buddy? And I thought, my God, that's Leroy Davis. Hell, I hadn't seen Leroy for 10 years. Every once in a while, Leroy would have to leave for a few years. Last time was Leavenworth for about 10. And he'd done that about 3 times. And I thought, well, hell, he's in the penitentiary. Someone's killed him. He should have lived so long. You know, and he's probably dead, or, you know, he wasn't around. And so, at any rate, there's a Leroy. And after the meeting, we held hands. Now, Leroy's hands, I mean, Leroy's a great big guy. Leroy's hands are about like that. And he's holding my hand, and we're saying the Lord's Prayer. And God, I felt uncomfortable and miserable. Because those kind of things used to make me feel like that until I got a little maturity in this program, Alcoholics Anonymous, and got exposed to some folks like you that told me that real men really did pray. Well, you know, I've known that really because my mom and dad prayed, and I was raised like that. And you asked me, hey, what do you think? What does this have to do with step 10? I don't know. I'll get around to those in a minute. But Leroy asked me, well, what do you feel about God? So I told him. So shortly thereafter, this was two years. I did that twice. Well, not 2 years each time. Came back in August 25th, 1973. I did all the things that you told me that those first 2 times I need to do. I came back with an attitude, they'll just explain it to me one more time, I'm going to do every damn thing, and I did. I came to those meetings. I got that sponsor, and I went to old Leroy Davis. Because Leroy wanted to talk about God, and I was impressed. Now, if it had been the Baptist preacher up at the First Baptist Church, or Calcutta Baptist, it wouldn't impress me too much, because, you know, he kind of gets prayed for talking about God. Well, Leroy don't make a damn penny, and he wants to talk about God. And I got old Leroy Davis as my sponsor. And I was just a ranting and raving maniac at 2 people in my life. Now we're going to get a little bit down to the ninth step here, or 10th step. And he said, well, Jed, did you employ those people? I said, yeah. Now I want you to know that Helene, whose little talk I missed, I had to run to Dallas this morning and get back, go back over the lake and get over. I've been running all day long. I had to go to a soccer game for my son there. I wanted to hear her, and I didn't get it. But she covered the first 3 steps in sponsorship, I assume, as related to the first 3, and Buddy the 4, 5, and 6, and Henry 7, 8, and 9. So I probably would not be talking to people who are in that part of their program. You're welcome to listen. But I probably, if I had to direct it to a particular individual, it'd be those of us who have been around long enough that we're on our maintenance steps, right? We're on 10, 11, and 12. So I'm not getting on to anybody, but I want to share some of my biases and some of my prejudices and some of my conclusions and some of my thoughts and some of my judgments concerning these things. two people that were just driving me nuts, and one of them owed me $60,000, and that's a lot of money for me. Owed me $60,000 cash, he cheated me out of. And I go to Leroy, and I'm talking to Leroy, and he has a dog by the name of Rocky, Cocker Spaniel. Rocky just loves everybody. And God, he's all over you, and you're sitting in an old couch chair in Leroy's living room, and old Rocky is all over you. And I was ranting and raving, and he was over there tickling Rocky's ears. Rocky ran over and jumped up on me, and he'd Leroy right in the middle of everything, said, "Get him, Rocky." Well, I'm serious about this. So Leroy listens a while, and he said, "Well, Judd, I've got something I want you to consider." So, knowing Leroy, I thought it was probably a plan on how I could kill this old boy and get away with it. That's how Leroy had operated all the years I knew him. So I said, "What's the plan?" He said, "Here's the plan. I want you to consider praying for him." I said, "Praying for him? Hell, do you mean praying for him? I've driven all the way across Oklahoma City to come over here and listen to this kind of crap." He said, "I want you to pray." And I said, "Leroy, I ain't never in my whole damn life heard anything so completely asinine as that." He said, "You need to do that, Judd. You need to do that, or you need to find another sponsor." And I said, "You're kidding." He said, No, you need to do that probably. "You don't have to do that, Judd, but you need to do that." I said, "Well, what in hell would you have me, what am I going to pray for? What kind of request am I going to make of God?" He said, "Pray that that they will have health, wealth, and happiness." I said, "Hell, he's got that. Bastard's rich. I made him $1 million. He tells everybody. I think it's closer to two, but I'll go for $1 million. And he lived in a $500,000 house, beautiful wife, two lovely kids. He seemed happier in hell. That was another reason why I was so miserable. You know, resentment, God, aren't they just wonderful? You know, somebody said that resentment's kind of like depression, could best be defined as frozen rage. Remember that? Because you can take this old resentment, you know, and you can freeze it. And you can put it in the freezer. And then when you want it re-sent, you can take it out and pull it out and nurture it and cultivate it. And as it gets thawed, the resentment grows. And with a little forethought, you can take it out the night before so it'll be real good and thawed early the next morning. Huh? Then when you get through with this thawed out rage, then you can refreeze it. He said, "Oh, you need to pray for him." I said, "How long?" He said, "A month." I said, "You want me to pray for this guy a month and ask for health, wealth, and happiness, something he already has?" He said, "Yeah, well, pray that he can keep it." I said, "Leroy, what good do you think that'll do? What possible good? Do you think it'll help him?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "You don't know whether it'll help him or not?" He said, "No, I doubt if it will, Judd." I said, "Well, why the hell are you having me pray for him then?" He said, "Because he'll help you." Well, I'm going to tell you something. I was raised by two people who had attitudes like that, and that's dangerous. You know what? You listen to that low enough, you'll either change it or you'll get real, real miserable. I recognized that attitude because my mom and dad had that same attitude. I never heard my mom say anything bad about a human being, or never heard her raise her voice in all the years that she lived on this earth, so 78 years before she was killed in an automobile accident. And that was the way that she did. And Leroy was telling me to pray for this guy. This is the guy that had the old boy in the telephone booth that I ran with for 13 years over. Leroy hurt people for years and years and years. I saw Leroy hurt people physically. And now he's telling me to pray for somebody. you know. And they got better in about 2 weeks. I love that part of our literature that says the key is willingness, and we need to open the door ever so slightly. You know, he's out there. We're not going to have altar call at the end of this. You know, so just bear with me. But I do attribute anything that I have in the way of sobriety to a God of my understanding today, and I believe that God is working in my life and has been for years, just as I suspect he has been in yours. But the key is willingness, and I've got to be willing to open that door ever so slightly, and I did very slightly. And I prayed, God give them health, wealth, and happiness. Amen. You know, and I faked it. I got to where I could add a few words. A couple weeks later, I was praying about a half decent prayer. And pretty soon, I got the meaning. I can tell you, the man still owes me $60,000. He'll never intend to pay it. I ain't felt bad about him for a long time. Hell with it. I don't have to have $60,000. I've got enough money saved up to last me the rest of my life, provided I die about 5:30 this afternoon. I don't have to have that old money. I can't afford that. I wanted to go hurt that man. And I see him drive that big old Mercedes, live in that big old $500,000 house. Those kids in those private schools, and I wanted to put a hurt on him like you cannot believe, and I'm broke, and I'm new in the program, and I didn't even own an automobile. And I felt like that was just damned unfair. Didn't seem to bother Leroy. We said, it'd get better. January the 1st of this year, through September, I want to share with you with the most miserable 9 months of my 64 years of living. Just went through a divorce that was, by all measures, it was a pretty good old divorce. We didn't yell, scream, fuss, fight, kick. But it broke down the family unit, and we have an 11-year-old son, and it just broke my heart. It broke my heart. And I'm going to tell you something. In order for me to stand here this afternoon and share that with you, is evidence that I've damn sure matured. I've gotten better. And I attribute a lot of this to old Leroy Davis and his ability to set me down in that chair and say, get him, Rocky. Yeah, I need some bad judge. This too shall pass. Oh, God. You know, it's awful easy. I've seen these old boys get up in these podiums here, and they have these podium rings. You know, they got a diamond about that big around. Say, well, I finally got to that part of my program where I found it. Money ain't everything, oh yeah. Somebody's got $20 million, 14 Cadillacs, and a house a half a mile long. Hell no, money's not everything. But you should have seen him when he was out there struggling for it. It's a lot easier to have that attitude. It's a hell of a lot easier to be spiritual with a mortgage payment made, isn't it? Told Lou, I don't know how to do this praying very much. I don't know much about praying, and I damn sure don't know anything about meditation. I just barely am able to define it. He said, Judd, a prayer is an oral petition to God, and meditation is listening. Isn't that simple? I said, I don't know how to do that. He said, well, go to the bottom of page 98 in your 12 and 12. And then continue over on page 99. There's a part, a little story in there, a prayer that, you know, that an old boy from a little town in Assisi, Italy said once. And they made a saint out of it. Study that prayer and get to where you can recite it the next time you come over here. Or don't come back over here until you can. Damn. Hadn't paid that much attention to that prayer. I'm going to tell you something. That's pretty strong, isn't it? That where, you know, there's hate, I might bring love. Where there's discord, I may bring harmony. Where there's error, I may bring where there's wrong, I may bring a sense of forgiveness, and et cetera, et cetera.
So I thought, well, I'm going to try that. I thought this about 2 weeks ago. I remember when I used to really strive for this. I'm going to try this again, so I did. I'm able to do it about 2 or 3 minutes a day if you'll give me about 4 different shots. Just about the time that I get that part down there, you know, I may bring love where there's hatred. There'll be some old gal jump out in front of me on Central Expressway there in Dallas coming off Long Hill, and I think, you bitch! Yeah. And I'm right back to where I, you know, I'm back, started again. You know? But if it hadn't been for my sponsor, I wouldn't have done those things. Old Leroy was always there. I don't ever remember in all my years, and I speak more of old Leroy because he was my sponsor for 17 years. Cersei in Dallas is 84 years old. He's been sober for 100 years. He's a beautiful human being, and I just love him to death. But Leroy was the one that brought me, you know, along there for 17 years. And I'll never forget old Leroy. I think what impressed me most about Leroy was this guy that hurt people for so long that was willing to talk about God. Now that impressed me. I'm going to tell you something. I was impressed. And I used to be embarrassed when people talked like that, as I shared with you a while ago. Are we closing this at 4? Thank you. Henry got part of my time. The man that, or the woman who doesn't want to be the sponsor, I can relate to that. Or doesn't want to have the sponsor, I can relate to that. That's exactly the way I felt. But my mind got right that third time back, and I hope last time, when I came back with an attitude that they'll just explain to me one more time. Just tell me one more time. Because I didn't think I was going to be able to pull up that time. I thought I was going to die after that time. Don't believe I'm going to be able to pull up off this whole stuff. But if they'll just explain it to me once more, I'm going to do every damn thing they tell me. Every damn thing they tell me. Just to the best of my ability. I went back to the class and club. And there's some of those people still there. And they didn't ask me why I went back out. They just welcomed me back with a lot of love. And I went to, if you wanted to know who went to what meetings at the class and club, I was the world's authority. Because I attended more meetings there than any other human being for the next 13 months. Because I attended every one of them except 4. You know. Because I just really put full time. People used to come in and say, have you got a job yet? Hell, I wasn't looking for a job. No. I'm looking, what made you think I was looking for a job? Well, you're not working. No, hell no. There's a lot of people that's not working. I'm not working and I'm not looking for a job. Then the next logical question is, well, how are you making a living? It's not any of your damn business. Yeah? I'm not looking for a job. And I just did full time for 13 months getting sober. And I spent it with my sponsor in AA meetings, and my God, it was a wonderful feeling, wasn't it? Remember those days? Sometimes 3, 4, 5 meetings, can you believe it? You know, well, it's not like that today. I don't go to as many meetings. Of course, I don't feel as good either. I feel pretty good. Now, those first 9 months I shared with you a while ago were horrible. Even thought about killing myself. Can you believe that? I had never, in all my drinking and drugging, never considered suicide. Never, never. I guess everybody thinks about fleeting thought, but never seriously. I seriously considered killing myself. Oh, my God. The reason that I'm just dying is because of my son. And this is really smart. I'm here to tell you. If it hadn't been for old Cersei Whaley down there, I may have done that. I don't know. I want to see my sponsor often. If you want to see my sponsor, you go to 2353 Beaumont Street at noon except Sunday. Now, Sunday he goes to the First Baptist Church downtown Dallas to listen to Dr. W.A. Criswell. Those other 6 days, he's at that meeting. So he's easy to find. And he offices there. He rents some space from the corporation that manages that building. And he goes to about 3 meetings a week at night. So he goes to about probably 400 meetings a year. Not bad for no 84-year-old man. He's been sober since May the 10th, 1948. You think that continuity and perseverance doesn't have something to do? You think that going to meetings isn't important? I'm suspecting he could probably go on in without ever going to another meeting. But you see, he wouldn't be able to help people like me. Now, what I've done? Here's an old boy that's got all these years, and I'm thinking about killing myself. Boy, I've really come a long way, haven't I? If you want what I've got, you're willing to go to any lynch of you. Here I am thinking about killing myself. Just dying. And finally, he said, you know, Judd, I really believe that it's time for you to quit feeling sorry for yourself and get back to the things that are really important here. So he gave me a list of things to do. And I thought, well, hell, I knew that 20 years ago. He says, it's not what you know, Judd. It's what you do. You see, the old boy that knows how to read but doesn't read the book has no significant advantage over the old boy that doesn't know how to read, because you see, it's not what we know. I don't suffer from my ignorance. God knows I have enough of that in many different areas. But when it comes to hurt and pain in my life, I don't hurt because of my ignorance. I know enough. And if you've been to 90 meetings in 90 days, you probably do too. I know what to do, you see. But knowing what to do and doing it, that's the difference. I need to do these things. Hell, I knew what to do. I was just unwilling to do them. All I could think about was, you know, how pitiful I was. And how I hurt. And poor me. And my God, is this all there is? Well, it's not all there was. Life is good, even after divorce. You know, or anything else. I shared once, and I'm going to share this again, and we'll close it down here. Many years ago, Helene reminded me of it a while ago. I was speaking one night. In fact, I shared that I was just about to speak, I think it was the Friday night before, at the Western Club in Oklahoma City, and my brother was comatose, had been for 32 days, and they called me about 5 minutes before I went to the podium and told me that he was critical. And I'm going to share something with you about my brother. But first, I want to tell you about a little thing I had just read not too long ago about one of my old favorite football coaches, Vince Lombardi, who said, I never lost a football game. I merely ran out of time. There you go. Never lost a game. Just ran out of time. Well, you know, those of us who are old enough to remember Coach Vince Lombardi, I'd almost bet about 2-1 that in most cases, if it had gotten another quarter, he would have won. That's the kind of coach he was. But with that said, I want to share something with you about my oldest brother, Herb, that I emulated to the point where I thought they were going to kill me. That's why I got such a crooked nose. He was 6'4" and weighed about 270. He took on all comers. And I had 4 more brothers just like him. And that's the way we used to conduct our affairs. Well, time goes on, and I got sober. And with my brother just over, and he and I have the same sobriety date. We decided that maybe we should go by and talk to the oldest brother about the possibility of drinking being a problem for him. So we agreed to meet at 7 o'clock at the old motel where he was holed up in out on South Shields, just down the street where I pulled up. So we met there and went in and talked to Herb for about 20 minutes. It had been agreed that I'd do most of the talking. And so I talked to Herb, and he was very much a gentleman, and he sat there and coughed and hacked. And there was about that much in the old Jim Beam bottle sitting on the buffet over there, and I know how badly he wanted that drink, because I'd had many of those early morning drinks with him over the years. But he didn't. And he listened, and at the end, He said, I know you're right. I know that the only reason why you guys are here is because you love me. I know it's hurting me financially. I know it's hurting my marriage. I know it's killing me physically. And I know I've got to do something about it. It's pretty good so far, isn't it? I said, well, okay. He said, but I think I can do it myself, boys. Does it make sense? It did to me. That's what I used to think. That's what I used to think. I thought that's why I damn near died. Handled it himself. And he did. You know. They called me on that phone and told me it's critical. And I thought, well, what do I do? And I went on up and I said, you know, I've already been over 20 times, so nothing I can do. And I thought, I'm just going to go ahead and talk, thinking I'll feel better. And I shared that night about these things. And there was a man sitting there that night who reminded me many years later how bad he thought it was that I had said something that I'm going to tell you that I've said. But the same thing happened to him 15 years later. And he said, I could sure see where you were coming from. And I shared with him that my brother Herb was in bad, bad shape. But it was going to be a good day. Even if we lost him, it could still be a good day. You know? Now, my brother Herb was an honest man. You could depend on what my brother Herb told you. He worked with his hands all his life. He was a tile setter. If he told you he was going to be at his house next to your house next to us, he'd tile your house, you'd depend on that. Because he would do those things. Even as he was drinking, he was still able to fulfill those commitments like that. So my brother Herb was an honest man. He was a truthful man, a man of his word. And when he said, boys, I know it's doing this to me, but I think I can handle it myself. My brother Herb, I'm sure, planned on doing something about that. My brother Herb was an honest man. He told the truth. He planned on doing something about this. Now I'm going to share with you some things that my brother Herb didn't plan on. He didn't plan on that old car being parked where it was. And he didn't plan on hitting that old parked car when he did. He didn't plan on being comatose for 30 days. And he didn't plan on dying while I was delivering that talk at the Western Club 32 days later. You see, the one thing my brother Herb didn't figure on, couldn't plan on, was the same thing that plagued Coach Vince Lombardi every time I watched a football game. My brother Herb didn't plan on running out of time. My brother Herb ran out of time. So if you're new or nearly new here, I want to tell you that if you don't have a sponsor, I would suggest for your consideration that you would get one. You'll enjoy doing business with them. Remember that one? We want you to know that we love you. You're very important. We care for you. And we just want you to keep coming back. Thank you very much.